I've been pregnant 3 times, so I'm familiar with what it feels like to lose weight like rapidly.
Did you have the same type of weight fluctuation with each pregnancy, or did one? What do you have?
More every time.
Oh yeah. Really?
But you mean like gender? Like yeah, for the gender? Like, oh what, yeah, like, no, that does, didn't really matter.
It didn't really matter.
I have boy, girl, boy, and I feel like each pregnancy I gained like more weight, but then each pregnancy I lost it within like a year. Like I would lose like more, like I'd be like skinnier than I was before I got pregnant by like the end of the year after, and then after I stopped nursing my babies it would creep back up. So
right
I kind of tend to gain and lose the same 15 pounds over and over. So
I think that a lot of people do that. I think yeah. That's and it's like, does it, is it like with the holidays, like
oh yeah, this is definitely like, this is fluffy Holly right now.
This is fluffy Holly. With me, it'll start because like my birthday's in September, so it'll start with my birthday and like birthday cake, and then it'll go into Halloween with Halloween candy.
Yeah.
And then it'll go into like just all the sweets and stuff that start to appear during the holidays, you know. What about you? Is it year round, or is it?
Oh
is
no!
It
a specific, yeah, it's definitely the holidays.
The holidays, yeah.
And it's hard, like with kids. Like I want to, you know, do all the things, like make the cookies and stuff like that. And I mean, they obviously have giant buckets of Halloween candy that will be in our house till probably after Easter, and then there'll be a whole nother new round of candy.
Oh,
so it's just
Easter,
it's just
candy.
Constant.
Yeah, I forgot about
and
the Easter
candy. And I don't
candy.
Want, you know, I don't want to be like, oh, we're not going to make cookies because mommy's, you know, trying to watch your weight. And I have such little self-control if something's in the house.
Really?
Like, yeah. Oh, with, okay. Well, it depends on what it is. But uh-huh. Cookies, oh my God. I love cookies.
Let's get this out of the way. Holly McMullen, how the hell are you?
Did we start?
Yeah, we started because I was like, oh, hell let's yeah. talk about cookies. But then that was going to be another rabbit hole. So Holly McMullen, how the hell are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. It's fine. It's good to finally have you on the podcast.
Oh, thanks. Finally. I mean,
yeah. Well,
I've only known you a hot minute. But
And I wanted to get to know you a little bit better, so I like we'd have stuff to talk about.
Yeah, for sure.
But let's talk about cookies. So, if you were gonna make some Christmas cookies, what are you gonna make?
Ooh, I love a good. Oh, frick! What are they called? I can't think of what they're called. Like the almost like sugar cookies, but they're coated in that like cinnamon sugar snickerdoodle cookies. Yes.
Yeah.
I love like a soft cookie. Like
I love
I'm not
a soft
big
cookie
into
too.
Like the crunch. I want like really soft.
And if
soft.
It's a crunch cookie, I'm just going to dip it in my coffee until it's soft.
Yeah.
Yeah. So sometimes a hard cookie is kind of good for dipping in coffee.
Mm-hmm.
What about like the chocolate chip with walnuts? That seems to be a Christmas staple.
I love chocolate chip cookies. I don't like nuts in them very much. I just think it's like, I don't know, I'm like a purist, I guess. But my family has like this really good chocolate chip cookie recipe, and it's so good. And I just judge everyone else's cookies based off of that. I'm like, it doesn't live
unfairly
up.
Judge yeah. everyone's cookies, right? Yeah. Off of that. My brother-in-law makes a cheesecake that is just, yeah, exactly. And no cheesecake compares. Like
yeah.
there's no way. Nothing even comes close to my brother-in-law Bill's cheesecake. And I hope. I don't think I'm going to get a piece because I think he busted out on Christmas Day and I'm not going to be in town for Christmas. I'm going to be in town for the 23rd and the 24th and then the 25th. I'm driving back to Sacramento. So.
Okay.
Newer comic. You've been doing comedy, what, like 7-8 months?
Since July. So six?
Okay.
Yeah.
And what made you, like, did you have like a it's now or never moment, or was it like, oh, I don't know. Let me just find a hobby. What was it?
No, I mean, yeah, it was more of a now or never moment. It's definitely something I've always wanted to do. I don't think I ever realized how kind of easy the bar of entry is, you know?
Yeah.
So it's one of those things, like, I would watch specials and, you know, see comedy, and I almost had a hard time watching it because that, like, desire to do it or to find out if I could do it was always so prevalent, like, I don't know. Just seeing people perform in general, it's almost hard for me to enjoy it when I'm like, I want to be up there, you know?
Okay, so was it a performance thing? Like, was there an option of like, oh, maybe I want to sing, maybe I want to do theater, or was
well,
it like,
I
want to do
theater.
Okay.
I grew up doing
theater.
Yeah. And I for sure would have been like all in on that, but I'm not a good singer.
Okay.
I can sing in a choir and I can like carry a tune. And if you hear me sing, you're not going to be like, make it stop. But you're also not going to like want to sit there and listen to it for a long time. not tone deaf, but not good. Mm-hmm. So I didn't like pursue that because I grew up in Montana. So, it wasn't like a huge scene. Most of the theater they did was musical theater. So I just did a lot of chorus parts, but I loved being on stage. I did speech and debate in high school. I did speech and it was like humorous oral interpretation of stories. Yeah, the word oral was in the, yeah.
Did I make a face when you said oral?
It looked a little like you're like, that's not a real thing, but it was. You're like, that's what you did in high school. Yeah, sure. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was like, we would like go on tournaments and stuff like that. And I loved that. Like I loved, it was like 10 minutes of, standing up and by yourself talking. And you weren't writing your own material, but you were like interpreting like humorous literature and stuff like that. So I loved that. And then I've always loved being on stage in my super duper Christian era. I did preaching. I've always felt comfortable on stage. Yeah,
you've been on stage and you've held court on stage, like especially with the preaching part, right?
Yeah.
Cuz like the speech and debate, was that like as part of a team or were you going one on one with people?
It's part of it. You're like on a team, like, but you're competing and you go by yourself. One at a time? Yeah.
Do you think that helped you with roast battles?
Probably. Well, so I didn't actually do the debate part. Oh, so okay. It was more of like a performance. It's almost more like a monologue.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And that's in high school. You're doing that in high school. Okay. So then you get married, start having kids, and then like all those, all like that kind of stuff. Like, did you have the comedy bug when you were younger? Did it only come to you like after?
Yeah. I didn't have a whole lot of exposure to comedy growing up. Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about where you grew up? Like, you grew up in Montana. Like, you grew up, like I made a joke with you once that, like, it sounds like you grew up in the town that Footloose took place in.
Yeah, kind of. Certainly in the household. Uh-huh.
So, were your parents very religious?
Very religious. How you My got dad's into? A pastor.
Mm-hmm. What?
So, I grew up Baptist, and then we started going to, like, a bigger church, kind of. It's affiliated with a denomination, but it runs very much like a non-denom mega church. Kind of, it was what we were involved with when I was in high school. But just very evangelical.
Mm-hmm.
I joke. Parker Newman asked me once, like, "Oh, what did denomination?" And we were like, "It was the right one." like that's kind of the vibe,
What? How did Parker?
Parker said he used to be in that world briefly.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I was gonna say, well, because Parker's not Jewish, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, how did the Jewish Parker take?
He was evangelical for a brief season, so he knew about.
Oh wow, I didn't know that about Parker. I think I need to talk to him more. When me and Parker talk, Parker Newman is probably next to Lexi Accinelli, who is just newer, but. Parker Newman is probably the most brought up comic.
Oh, I know that. And I've heard you say that on the podcast. I was like, I'm going to sneak that in as quickly as possible.
Yeah, let me get that off. Yeah. Parker gets brought up all the time. But Parker's very sociable and he's at all the mics. And Parker and I always talk about music. Well, Parker and I always talk about music and we just have the best talks.
I feel like, so my first exposure into the Sacramento scene, our timeline here is going to be all over the place, but
yeah,
I knew I was going to start and I was going to do the comedy spot class. And so I started following Drew Absher on Instagram because I'm a stalker and I was like, okay, who's teaching this? Is he even worth, learning from? So I watched his videos. I was like, this guy is really funny. But then he, was promoting Orange House.
Mm-hmm.
So my husband and I went to a show there before I even started comedy. And Parker Newman dropped by and did a guest set. And he was so funny. And so then when I started seeing him at mics, I was kind of initially intimidated. Like, this guy's really good. And then, your first conversation with Parker, he's so down to earth and cool. So that to say.
Yeah. When he's a cool guy. When you first mentioned comedy and you said a phrase, you said you didn't realize how low the bar, and I might be misquoting you, but you just said, you didn't realize how low the bar is set to start comedy.
Yeah.
And you're referring to open mics where anybody can sign up. Mm-hmm. And did you think it was going to be because open mics are look, I'm not shitting on the scene at all, but open mics are not a good place for someone who is working hard on their mental health and like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, like, yeah. Like what, so were you, what were you expecting when you went to your first open mic?
I did the comedy spot class. You did the class
before the mics. Okay.
So I did that first, and then I had like my grad night, and then I think a couple days after that, I went to Stab for my first open mic, and I was so nervous going and so intimidated by the people there, and you know, just I was so in my head of like, I have to nail my set, you know, like the exact thing I worked on at the in the class, and I was like just, you know, so out to like make an impression. And I think I kind of, it did okay. I like fumbled through it a little bit. And it's also, it's a Stab open mic, you know, it's like the 10 comics who were there were nice and like, great job, you know, but it's not like they were laughing, you know, no one really laughs.
No one really laughs. Yeah.
Well, but it's just I funny, like,
the,
like I like how
the thing Johnny says where like no one laughs. They just look over at their buddy and be like, that was funny.
Yeah, totally.
That was funny.
But I was also like, oh my gosh, okay, these people are like nice, they're like happy that I'm here, you know. I was definitely kind of anticipating more of like, oh, who's this, you know, like what, why does she think she can do this kind of, and that's not the vibe at all. People are happy to see a new face and very welcoming, so it was
you
nice.
Know you and I think, you know, me and Johnny were talking about this, me, Johnny and Emma kind of touched upon this, like you came on the scene when there's a this group of comics that they all super support each other and they're all like really supportive and like just like, oh, great job, maybe almost a little bit too much. Like maybe almost a little bit too much, but I don't want to discourage people being nice to each other. But also, like, once you started hitting mics, can you see the difference of how friendly Comedy Spot and Stab is versus like some of the other mics? Like, and I'm not shitting on some of the other mics, but it's just like the Stab crowd and the Comedy Spot crowd, it's like a one big happy family. But some of the other open mics, because there's like a lot of comics that don't go to like the Stab and Comedy Spot open mics, and they just kind of like hang out at Henry's and Players and all these other kind of gregarious type
scenes. Oh my gosh, I mean, the first time I went to Henry's, I was like,
were you around for Scoreboard?
No.
Oh,
I mean, if I was, I didn't ever go.
Yeah. Well, the score. Yeah. Wait. Scoreboard was great. Matt Medina and Cameron Almeida did a great job running Scoreboard, but it was the inmates running the asylum. Like, definitely was like, it was crazy, and it was not a place for a 52-year-old man. Okay, like that's all I'm saying is like, it was crazy. Like the they would literally like, they would get there like 20 minutes late, and they would just throw a notebook out on the counter, and it was just like, and it was just so crazy. So sorry about that. But what was it like? So what was it like? Like, you're hanging out at Comedy Spot, you're hanging out at Stab, then you decide to go to Henry's.
Yeah, I think, I went to like Golden Bear, and then people were like, oh, you got to come to Henry's. That's like, that's the hang. That's where it's at. And
it definitely,
I was like,
is
okay,
the hang.
Cool. But I just didn't realize like how painful being on stage there was going to be.
No one's paying any attention.
No one's paying attention. You literally get like glares from people sometimes of like, they're like, I just came here to have a beer, and now this lady's talking about her kids. You're like, I'm sorry.
right. And Henry's definitely is a hang. Like, everyone's just, it feels like, well, when Golden Bear was still going, it felt like people would go to Golden Bear, practice their set, and then go to Henry's and hang out.
Yeah, totally.
Yep.
Totally.
Yep. And so who were some of the first comics that like kind of like, you're like, oh, they're there, I'm gonna go hang out? Like, you just started seeing them, and you kind of felt like when you see them, you just go hang out, you know what I'm saying?
Me and John Mondragon hang. We run a lot of our jokes by each other, which is funny because he's like one-liner only, and I don't do that at all. So it's like a good, you're like, I'm not gonna rip your stuff, you're not gonna rip my stuff. Let's see, who else? I mean, all the ladies, to be honest, are awesome. Ray Dean for sure was one of the first people who was really welcoming to me. Anu B.
Oh yeah,
she was super. I haven't seen her in a while. I think
she
travels around
doing
a lot.
So much stuff.
Yeah. But she was super, super nice. Would like offer to film my set and stuff.
Oh,
like
really?
That. Yeah,
that's so nice.
So
of them.
Nice. The first time I went to Golden Bear, Audacious saw me and was like, hey, what's your name? I'm going to add you on Instagram. The ladies, you know, we do stuff. I was like, I was so blown away that she was that welcoming for like, oh, I've seen you one time. Oh, you're a female comic. Come hang out with us. I was like, that is really cool. So I don't know. Everyone has just been fantastic.
Yeah, you came along at a really fun time, and mm-hmm. and it's really fun and supportive. What was I like to say that like our first sets are like a lifetime of experiences. What were you talking about in your first set, and are you still doing that material, or is it kind of starting to fade away?
Yeah, no, I am. What I worked on like in my class was the Disneyland stuff.
Okay,
the Disney bit.
Adult stuff.
Disney, yeah, adult,
which is hilarious.
Thank you. It's definitely like tightened up and molded, and I've dropped a lot of the jokes that I had and added different ones. But that was like the subject matter of my first.
Yeah,
my first
the Disney adult stuff is hilarious. I think I told you I dated a Disney adult, and it was like I knew they liked Disney, but it wasn't mm-hmm. until like we hung out that they were like slowly starting to let me know how much they really liked Disney.
Yeah, you're the one that she had like a suitcase or something of Mickey,
box full of the Mickey ears. Yeah, I don't think she listens to the podcast. So yeah, we can talk about her.
Oh,
she's great. She's great. We're still pals.
What's
I love her.
First
she's
and
great.
Last name?
Yeah.
Where does she live?
I'll show you pics. So you're writing mm-hmm. does. How do you write every day? What's it? Because you're busy, right? You're married. You got three kids. Mm-hmm. What's it like trying to balance all of that?
Yeah, I'm not good at balance at all.
Were you not good at balance coming into it?
Oh, I have kind of a very hyper fixation personality. So like, if I'm excited about something, if I'm passionate about something, I'm like, that's all I want to do. It's all I think about. So, and that's obviously what comedy is for me, and so it's hard for me to like set it aside and be like, oh, right now I need to like be thinking about the fact that my kids are supposed to wear a different friggin' holiday outfit every single day of this month at school. So I'm just really bad at like having multiple things running through my head at the same time, but working on it.
Are you good at like how what are the ages of your kids? Like what, how old is the oldest?
Seven.
Oh.
Seven, five, and two. Yeah,
they're not even at the age where they can help you out yet. Because
no.
I was like, if you have like a 10 or a 12 year old, I was gonna say, are you good at letting the 10 or 12 year old help you? Like, are you good
totally
at letting
would.
People help you with stuff?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Okay. And yeah. Are you trying to rush them to that stage where they could be helpful? But that's, you said,
yeah,
seven, five,
and my 7-year-old is not like a mature seven. He's a he's so sweet, but he's like in no hurry.
It's kind of like a seven you could be proud of. you know, my 7-year-old, I just don't introduce them. Here's the 5-year-old. They're the smart one.
Yeah, well, she is. Yeah. So if my 5-year-old was the oldest, she would be running the show. But
okay.
So yeah, he's a boy. He's like the youngest in his class. He's really small for his age. He's really like, I don't know. He's never been one to be like, no, I do it myself. He's still like, tie my shoe, you know. And you're like, oh my god.
And
he still uses training wheels. Yeah, he still uses training wheels on his bike because he just doesn't care. We're like, you want to learn how to ride? And he's like, no, this works. And we're like, okay. So yeah, he's not in a hurry to help mommy out by any means.
Is it a trip looking at your kids and seeing different aspects of your personality and your husband's personality?
Oh yeah.
And seeing them kind of mesh and kind of like, do you see it like kind of like this kid's caught between the both of us and they don't know which way to
yeah.
go?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my son is my husband. Like, he is
okay.
a tiny version of my husband. They look exactly alike and they do all the same mannerisms. Like, he'll do something and I'll just look at Chris and be like, that's your fault.
Uh-huh.
Or I'll tell my mother-in-law a story about my kid and she's like, oh my gosh, like that is exactly Chris.
And so, and the 5-year-old that you have high hopes on, is that a mini you?
I don't know. She reminds me a lot of my sister. She's definitely, she's very like larger than life. She's very dramatic. I think she's me without the trauma.
Without the drama or trauma.
Oh, she's all
okay.
drama, but uh-huh. like I grew up a very kind of repressed childhood and we weren't allowed to have a whole lot of like self-expression, so she's kind of is a little freer version of me, I think. But
when did you start breaking out of like that? Did you have to separate yourself from the religion, or did you have to move out of Montana? When did you kind of start to break free from the when did you start to dive down the rabbit hole of like, I'm just gonna start observing? Because like and I have had conversations where like I'll reference something in pop culture and you're like, no.
Like, oh, did that happen before 2012? Because I don't know.
What was it? Was it a rebellion? Was it turning 18? Do you want to get into
it? Yeah, I'll get into it. It's definitely a huge part of what makes me who I am. So I grew up very religious. When I was in high school, I definitely was like questioning and kind of wrestling through things. But right out of high school, rather than going to college, I went into an organization called Youth with a Mission. Don't do it. It's a cult.
It's a cult. Call your dad.
So it's like an international Christian mission organization, non-denominational. They like train you and then they like send you out to do mission trips. So I like, on one hand, it's cool. I think I've told you this because I've lived all over the world. I lived in Germany for 2 years. I lived in Australia for 2 years. I've been to over 20 countries, like in Asia and Europe and the South Pacific, like doing missions.
So you start this when you're like 18?
18.
Wow. So at 19 years old, at what age were you in another country? Was it 18. Right at 18?
Yeah, right at 18.
What was the first country you went to?
Australia.
How long were you there?
I was there for 6 months, and then I came home for a few months, and then I went back.
Were you homesick, or were you just like so caught up in the...
I was all in for sure. I loved it. I mean,
is something like that expensive or
no? You like fundraise to do it, and then you're basically like working for them, but rather than them paying you, you're like paying them to work and live there. It's very insular, so you're like working and living with the same people in a commune. We weren't like allowed to date, all of it. It was very interesting.
Was there dating going on in the commune?
Well, like, okay, so you would like table, you could like date,
or not under the
you
table, but
date,
you know,
but you had to get permission from your leaders to like, you'd had to like go to them and be like, I like this person, will you pray about it? And then they'll pray about it and tell you if the Lord says it's okay for you to date them or not. So you pretty much have to like know you're gonna marry whoever you want to like take out before you.
Wow.
yeah
And were you seeing that happen with people? Like,
there mm-hmm. were some bad couplings there, but basically what happened to me,
let's get the long story. We're fine.
Is that there was like a leader in, so it's like a very charismatic group. So praying in tongues, prophecy, exorcisms, all of it.
Really?
Yeah. So there's a leader there that picked me out when I was 18. So like fresh, I was there for like a couple months before this happened. He basically like came to me, told me that God like had given him this vision of me before he even met me, and told him all these things about me, that I was going to be like a prophet and have like a healing ministry. And it was very like huge, like prophecy. And I was 18. I was already in this cult where all this stuff was kind of in the water. And, you know, as any 18-year-old person, especially I think a young girl, I was so like hungry for an identity and hungry to like be somebody that I just ate it up. And then he, you know, of course was like, and you need me to mentor you. Mm-hmm. He was much, much older than me, obviously. He was married, he had kids, but and you know, there's so many obvious red flags looking back, but I was just so naive. And
right, well, you're 18.
All the other adults around me didn't seem like they thought it was weird how much time I was spending with him or how much interest he was taking me. And he also had like a lot of other girls that he was kind of mentoring. For 4 years basically he groomed me.
I was gonna say, was it mentoring or was it grooming?
It was 100% grooming. It was grooming. So much psychological torture and sexual abuse. And in the end I like ended up coming forward and like telling other leaders what was going on, and they like confronted him and he was like, nah, she's making it up. And they were like, yeah, you're probably making it up, and basically kicked me out. So how 4 years of my life
did ended. Other people get kicked out, like when this is going on, like did you hear other stories like similar to this?
Not until years later. So that was in 2012. that I left. So I was 22 years old and went back to Montana, moved back in with my parents, and basically for years tried to like unravel what happened to me, because I didn't even see it as abuse for years and years.
Okay, I was gonna say, so when you leave at 22 and you go back to Montana, do your parents think that you're just kind of done with it, or do they know that you went back because it wasn't a good time for you?
I told them what happened with this guy. Mm-hmm. But the way I saw it then was that I had had an affair. Like, I got romantically involved with a married man, and that was bad on me. And also kind of him, but mostly me, because, you know, women in our sexual ways were just so deviant.
Yeah, facts. No.
Not to mention the fact he was in his, you know, late 30s and I was 20, but that's okay. I thought I sinned. I couldn't face the fact that I had been so naive and been so duped. And I really still believed that I was this like super special person that was gonna like do great things for the Lord. And it took me like years to unravel all of that and to finally be able to admit, like, no, it was all a lie. He picked me out from the beginning because of how immensely vulnerable I was, and got duped.
How did you unravel it? Was it therapy?
Reading, learning about narcissistic behavior, and because when I came home, I was like, no one's ever going to be able to understand what I just went through. Like, no one's ever going to be able to understand the depths and the nuance of the relationship I had with him. Like, it felt so special. And now you can watch so many documentaries, like the NXIVM documentary. I don't know if you know that one, The Vow.
Mm-hmm.
That one was a big eye opener for me, where I was like, oh, these men just have this like playbook that they follow.
Yeah,
like, I was like, I word for word have had this conversation before, you know, like, it's just, it's pretty nuts. So that, a lot of that therapy, about not even a year ago, I'm like in a Facebook group that's kind of like people who have come out of this organization that have been abused and are kind of working through it. Because it's a big organization.
Like,
that
guy, it's strong.
It started in like the 50s. It's a big thing.
Okay.
And this guy is like one of the,
he's still around.
One of the many leaders. Yeah. He's still around. He's still doing his thing. So I was in this like recovery group kind of thing, and this girl that I didn't know at all posted about how she had been like groomed and abused by this prophet leader, and just the way she told it, I was like, this has to be the same guy. So I like reached out to her, and we like connected, we talked on the phone, we basically realized that she replaced me almost months after I left.
Wow. Hey, did she kind of look like you? What was similar?
Yeah, I mean, we had like the same build. She's an American girl, she's very pretty. Yeah, I mean, we were both homeschooled, we were both like very sheltered, very naive.
Yeah
very similar stuff. She did kind of look like me. But then like just being able to process with her was huge. And I mean, that happened in the last year.
You're still working that out.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't affect me like it used to. Like, I would say for probably a good 8 years, I thought about it every day.
Holy shit.
Yeah. But now I'll go like weeks and I'll be like, oh yeah.
Right. What brings you to California? So that 22, you're back home. You're like, holy shit, what the fuck just happened? Yeah. And then at what point because is religion still big for you? Are you still okay. active?
Yeah. So that's another thing. So basically what happened, I moved home when I was 22. I started like going to the church that my parents were then going to, and that's where I met my husband. He was on staff at that church. He was a worship leader. We started dating. We dated for 7 months and we were engaged for 4 months, because that's how you do it when you're a Christian.
Okay.
So then we got married very, very quickly, and I was obviously in the midst of like incredible trauma that I wasn't facing. We were married for a couple years there before and 2 years after we got married, we had our first kid. And then when he was a few months old, we moved to the Bay, and that's where my husband is from.
Okay.
And at this point, we are still, like, I'm still all in on Christianity. I'm still, like, really trying to make ministry work in my life, because that's what I was so convinced I was supposed to do, was, like, be a pastor, preacher, leader. And so we moved to California to help at, like, his church that he grew up in. I mean, obviously, we had other jobs as well, but... I know, I'm sorry, this is getting really long.
No.
I'm turning your comedy podcast into, like, a religion deconstruction. So we moved there and we're helping in his church. And then a few years in, I realized, like, I don't know if I believe in this anymore. And once I started kind of pulling on those threads and reading and critically looking at things, it all unraveled. And that is really when I really started to find healing over what happened to me in the cult, because there was only so far I could go with the healing as long as
you still believed that in that
a lot of it was true.
Yeah.
And so I was really, like, it was really hard, probably 2 years of, like, sorting through what I believe and what I don't believe, and in the midst of that, figuring out how to be married and raise kids, because he's still a Christian, he still is, like, involved in church. He's there right now. But yeah, and you know, when you grow up in, like, the Christian ethos, marriage is really important, obviously, because, I mean, if you want to have sex, you better get married. Mm-hmm. So it was always like, oh, the only way to have a healthy marriage is if you're both pursuing Jesus at the same rate, and then realizing, like, oh, I'm not doing that anymore, and you still are. So it's taken a lot of communication and juggling, and we're still kind of working through it.
I think you'll always be working on it. Yeah, you'll always be working on it. You'll always be healing, right? Mm-hmm. And then now you added these three children to the mix, and now you're like, oh my God, how do I make sure that this doesn't happen to them, but also give them the opportunity and the option to follow in this religious life if that's what choose.
What they want. Yeah. And that it used to, like, really panic me about that. Like, I'd be like, I don't want them going to church. I don't want that, you know. And he was like, well, I do, you know. And but now I'm like, you know, a lot of what was so difficult about growing up in that was that it was so insular, and I didn't have any adults ever being like, that's not what everyone thinks, you know. And so now, like, my kids, you know, they go to Sunday school and they hear this and this and this. And then, like, the other day, my son was like, Mommy, how did God create the world in 6 days? And I'm like, that is a fantastic question. Right? What do you think? And then he goes, my friend Gary said that God didn't create the world. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. What did Gary say happened? And he said it just grew on its own. I was like, oh, yeah, well, you know, that's kind of what science shows us. Some people think that God grew the world slowly over time. Some people think God snapped his fingers and it appeared, but, you know, what do you think? And just getting to not be like, here's the answer, but getting to be like, it's okay to think.
That's what I wanted to ask you. So how old is your son?
7.
What answer would have been given to 7-year-old Holly that asked that same question?
Oh, it would have been, you know, God created the world in 6 days. On the 7th day, he rested, and definitely don't express doubts about that, or we will cut off your contact from whoever put that idea in your head.
So you're already breaking generational.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah.
That's awesome, Holly.
Yeah. And I will say, like, to my husband's credit, like, those are things he doesn't hold, like, real tightly. You know, he's like, I don't, you know, 7-day creationism, is that really, like, the hill to die on? So, and he is very much like, yeah, I want our kids to learn how to question things and come to their own conclusions, and he's not, like, brainwashing them. So, yeah.
Okay, so now you're in the Bay, then you move to the Sacramento area. How long is it mulling in you to take a comedy class before you actually take one? Like, how long did that?
When I was in the Bay after I had my daughter, so she's 5, so 5 years ago, after I had her, I, like, had, you know, I was like, maybe I should just see if this is something I could get into. So I started, like, looking at things in the Bay, and then I was like, I should, you know, write some material. So I, like, wrote a bunch of jokes, and then so stupidly, I was like, now I'm going to make my husband sit down on the couch and I'm going to do stand up for him. And my husband is super funny. He is so funny. And he he's just sitting there like trying so hard to look supportive, but he's also like just a deeply honest person. Like, he's not gonna be like, that was great, babe. He's like, uh-huh. Like, he'll tell you if your hair looks like crap. He was just like, okay. And you know, I was like, I didn't have it memorized. I was like reading jokes out of a notebook, all nervous. And then after that, I was like, oh, I can't do this. This is, I thought I was funny and I thought I'd be good at this, but this was terrible. And so then I didn't. And then we ended up having another kid. So,
but did you find yourself like at parties or just when talking with two or three friends, did you find yourself being the funny one?
Oh yeah. I've always so arrogant. I've always been the funny one. I've always been like the funny one in my family. I've always been the funny one in the friend groups. Like I would think, yeah, that would probably be like the first thing people would say about me.
So here's something that started happening to me maybe about 10 years before I started doing comedy is like, I was funny, right? Mm-hmm. But I started realizing when I started being caught up in the, like, I started realizing in the moment that I have everyone's attention right now. Mm-hmm. I just said this, they laughed, I'm gonna take it to this.
Yeah.
Now I'm gonna take it to this. Ah, shit, I took it too far. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. Were you cognizant of stuff like that, yeah, when you're holding court?
Yeah,
I call it holding, like, court, right? Yeah.
Like, even, like, telling a story and you're like, oh, okay, I'm trying to get from point A to point Z, but I better have some jokes along the way. Otherwise, mm-hmm. I'm going to lose them
yeah, along the
and,
way, right?
And especially learning, like, this detail doesn't matter to get here. This detail doesn't matter. So I think just, like, you just naturally pick it up as you grow of, like, how to keep people's attention, mm-hmm. and how to entertain people.
Yeah, so you're slowly learning that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I started learning that as a young kid. I think because I'm the third of four girls, and so, like, I was the funny one. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I wasn't the smart one. I wasn't the pretty one. I wasn't, you know, I wasn't the athletic one, whatever. I was the funny one.
You're the third of four girls? Mm-hmm. Oh, your poor dad.
Oh, four God. Girls?
Oh, what do you mean?
I know this is a podcast. For all you listeners out here, this is how far back into my head my eyes are rolling right now.
Because it did. They did.
Oh, poor dad.
Poor dad. So, are you the... Because I'm not the funniest one in my family. I'm not.
Oh, really?
I'm not. My sister Amelia is the funniest mm-hmm. one. We'll have you in stitches, like, just mm-hmm. like, where you're just like, shut up, I can't, mm-hmm. you know? Are you the funniest of the four?
I'm the funniest of the four. One of my sisters, Heidi, is very funny, but she's not always as, like, confident in her funniness. So I remember even as a kid, like, she would, like, say something funny to me, and then I would say it out loud, and then she'd be pissed. We'd get a huge laugh, and I'd be like, well, you should have, you know, taken a risk.
Yeah, so she's the class clown, and you're the comic. You're like, yeah. You're like, write my material.
Yeah, no, I do think I'm funnier than her still, but she's okay. Very funny. Okay. We'll like... make our other sisters mad because me and her will start bantering.
Are they all in Montana? Are you guys all separated?
We're all separated. So my parents are in Billings, Montana. My youngest sister is in Missoula, Montana. It's about 5 hours apart. My oldest sister is in the Portland area, and then my next oldest sister is in South Dakota. So we're all over.
None of your sisters have gotten to see you do comedy yet?
No, I showed them a video when I was with them, and they were really sweet about it. They were like, you sound really natural. You sound like you're just talking to us, which made me really happy because that's like the feedback my husband always gives me. Is he's like, you sound like you're doing a skit.
I think you're just... Does he say put that in your skit?
No, I think he just holds me to like this really high standard.
Okay.
You know, he's like, this is not good enough for Netflix. And I'm like, well, that's not what I'm going for at this point.
Be until for 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so you're doing comedy for a few months. What led, cuz right now you and I are both I'm Johnny's assistant, mm-hmm. or whatever. I don't know, what, teaching assistant.
Yeah.
What led you to Johnny Taylor's storytelling class? Did you watch some of the shows, or it was just on your radar?
I heard you talk about it a lot on the podcast. Mm-hmm. So shout out to you. Johnny should pay you more.
Did you hear that, Johnny?
And then what led me to it? Well, I was in his show. You got me booked on his show, his Johnny Taylor and Friends show.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of like, you know, I think I should get some more FaceTime with this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that was a lot of it, was just like, I want to like learn. And then I also wanted to, you know, be able to kind of work on a story that wouldn't be working on at an open mic, because it's just impossible to work on a story at an open mic.
So. It's hard. How long was your story right now? Do you remember?
Yeah, it's like 5 minutes.
Oh, so you could.
I could, but I wouldn't. I'd lose everyone, you know.
Well, you know, you're gonna lose anyone anyway.
I know.
So when I my approach at open mics and doing the stories at an open mic is like, I want to. I'm really more interested in seeing how long it's gonna to see if I can get it in under the 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of times at an open mic, I'll tell the host I'm working on a story. I might go 5:30, 5:25, but I'm not. I promise you, I won't go over 6.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they're really cool about that, because
yeah,
so many people run the light anyway at an open mic, and yeah, they're just
and it's
there.
Usually the worst people.
Yeah, and it's the people that are like, it's what I want to talk about. Let me see.
You're like, you're at 4:59. You can't say what do I want to talk about.
Yeah, or I love, I'm always like, I don't know, you probably know what I'm talking about. There's a couple of comics that will go up there and dance for like a fucking minute before they even start doing comedy. Oh, and I'm always like, this counts towards their time, right? You're counting this. Like, one time Danny Luna let Subas dance for like 5 minutes and then at the 5 minute mark cut him and took him off stage.
That's awesome. Was that at Vince's?
It was at Vince's, yeah. Vince's.
Danny doesn't always give the light at 5 minutes at Vince's, I noticed, because I was up there a couple weeks ago and the bar was just, they were drunk and they were heckling like crazy. And so I was like doing material and kind of going back and forth with them as well, because you kind of couldn't just plow over it. And then after a while, I was like, this has been longer than, you know, like when you do enough open mics, you know, kind of exactly what 5 minutes feels like.
Yeah.
And I was like, this has been 6 or 7. And so I was like, let's give it up for your host. And I got off, and then because I was recording and I looked at the timer, I was like, it was like 7 minutes. Danny, get me the frick off the stage. So I don't want to do this for 7 minutes.
How much time are you comfortable with right now? Like, you could probably stretch 10.
I did 12 at that show with you at the restaurant in Roseville.
That's right. Yeah.
I did 10 in Paradise at that theater show. And that I felt like that was a pretty solid 10. I think 10 to 12 is what I feel like. 12, I feel like I'm like throwing in some like,
you're doing everything
you jokes,
got.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. But now that I have the story, maybe I could do 15. I don't know.
We'll see. We'll find out. Right. Where was I going with that? So, I forgot where I was going with that, but yeah, Vince's will definitely test to see how much you love doing comedy or not.
Yeah.
Do you think you'll use comedy to, will you ever take comedy into the church or into like that theater to maybe help some of the kids or like, I don't know, is comedy, are you going to let those two roads cross?
Church and comedy?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think that I feel like I have to be an inauthentic version of myself when I'm in the church world.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I like swear a lot or even talk about very inappropriate, like I'm a pretty like PG-13 comic right now. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but it just feels, I don't know, I feel like I have to put on,
are
that,
you
like,
clean, are you
I yeah, it's, are you it's clean, yeah.
Uh-huh. So do you
but
see
not it? Really by like choice, it's just kind of,
it just happens,
you know.
Yeah,
not like, I'm just not a very dirty person.
We'll get you there.
Yeah, no, I am, like, I can riff and I can like enjoy, you know, dirty. I'm not like a prude. I just don't think my mind like goes there per se.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Are you happy with how your story's coming along for the storytelling class?
I am I think I need a lot more jokes. I don't know, it's just a weird, it's such a different vibe. Like, I was like, got off the stage and I was like, that's fine, but it still felt like I went like 30 seconds between laughs, and it's just too
that
long.
Is
it's too long.
That is such a hard thing to get over, and it's something that I really struggle with a lot of, like, I'm not like, they're not laughing.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's rough, you know. Yeah. But it's fine.
Yeah,
you're doing fine.
I think as long as you can like build suspense and interest in your story, like if they're listening, then that's good, right?
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Right on. Are you ready for 5 easy questions?
I am.
All right. Did I send them to you?
Yeah,
oh, well, you listen to the podcast.
I listen,
you know,
to the podcast. I know what's up.
Okay. So, Holly McMullen, who or what inspires you?
Okay. T- Taylor Tomlinson. I love Taylor Tomlinson.
Let's talk about Taylor Tomlinson for like half an hour.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. When'd she come on your radar?
Oh, after her first Netflix special. I don't know how many years ago that was. But I think I was really blown away that she was talking about stuff that I felt like I would want to talk about, you know, because she grew up really religious and, you know, talking from the perspective of a young woman and somebody kind of who, you know, was like working out relationship with her parents and religious trauma. And she made it so funny and so relatable. And she has so many bits that I'm like, I could have written that. Like, I couldn't have written that because she's a freaking genius. But like,
you see that, it's so true to my life. I could go down that road.
And then like seeing her in, you know, in a theater and on these tours, telling that to so many people who want to listen to it was like really inspiring to me, because I'm like, okay, people are interested in this. Because I do feel like my life has like a lot of niche stuff. You know, like I was in a cult. Like, that's not entirely relatable. But I think I'm hoping someday I'll be able to talk about that on stage and make it funny and not just trauma dumping like it was on your podcast.
But I think you need to do the trauma dumping.
Yeah,
it's part of it. It's part of the process. Yeah.
But she, like, she has this really funny bit in her first special where she talks about shopping for a card for her dad, when she's like, when you're a kid, you're like, you're the best dad in the whole world, done. And then you grow up and you're like, too much has happened, you know, and you're like, do you just have any blank cards that say, you're my dad, this is a card?
Thanks, Dad. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, that, like, I have literally been in, you know, Target being like, oh, no, doesn't apply. So I'm just, there's just so much there that I'm like, I love that she's brave enough to talk about those things. And she's also able to make it so funny. And clearly people love it. People want to listen to her.
Do you think you'd ever be in a place where you're far enough removed from the trauma that you could joke about it?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't toyed with writing for it on stage, but I definitely, like, I have, you know, friends who know what I went through. Like, my husband and I have this couple friends that we're close with, and the three of them will be like, oh, in college, blah, 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 blah. And I'll just be like, oh, fun, I was in a cult.
Listen to this. You know? Yeah, yeah.
Or they're like, my boyfriend in college. I'm like, oh, well, I didn't have a boyfriend then because it wasn't allowed. Well, guess what I had.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
All right, that's
so,
cool.
So I definitely can laugh about it. And I think I've always, you know, coped with trauma by joking about it and stuff. So it's more just figuring out a way to talk about it that's relatable for a broader audience and to be able to kind of quickly explain where I'm coming from without mm-hmm. taking, you know, all this backstory.
Yeah mm-hmm. Right on. Okay. What are you currently binging? Like, it could be a TV show, it could be a podcast, it could be a whatever, like reading about flowers, or what are you currently just soaking
up?
Oh,
you know me so well, reading about flowers. I am currently obsessed with the show Crashing. Have you ever watched Crashing?
Yes. Oh, it's like, God. There's two seasons or three seasons?
Three seasons.
There's three seasons.
And then it kind of abruptly ends, but they still did a really great job wrapping it up. The last episode
is not done,
brilliant.
Is it? I thought it was just on hiatus because of the strike.
No, it's been done.
Oh, wait. Crashing. Yeah. I got Crashing confused with Hacks. Crashing, Pete Holmes. Still mm-hmm. love it. Sarah Silverman.
Yes.
That comes in like season two or three.
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of comedians playing themselves. John Mulaney is in it. Artie Lang is in it throughout the whole thing. There's a lot of people. Rachel Feinstein, I love her. I love it because it feels so niche to me, like, because he's like simultaneously.
He's so neurotic.
He's such a goober. But he's like very sheltered. And he's working out, like, whether or not he still believes in the religion he grew up in and carried on as an adult. And he's like working through all that while simultaneously pursuing comedy. And so it's just, it feels like
he slips into doing comedy at churches again, right?
Yeah. Like, religion, it was just so funny because he's like, he ends up getting fired because he goes off and says some inappropriate stuff. But it's just, it's very funny to me because I, like, it feels like my two worlds and it feels very relatable.
Did you find Crashing after it had aired and like you were able to binge everything?
Yeah. Well, I became familiar with Pete Holmes when I was going through like deconstructing my faith, because he, you know, grew up very similarly to me and was a big Christian for a long time. He's good friends with like Rob Bell, who's big and I don't know, he used to be a big Christian pastor and then became much more like of a universalist and I don't know. So I've just became familiar with him and his podcast and stuff. And so then I started watching Crashing and I was like, this, I need to be this guy's friend, which this is such a tangent, but
tell
I'll make
me,
it quick.
Tell me, I want to hear
it. So my sister is engaged. She's getting married in February and the guy she's marrying, his last name is Holmes. And the last time I was with her, I was like, oh, who's doing your ceremony? And she was like, oh, we're actually going to have, we're going to have my fiance's uncle do it. Because he's a comedian in LA, and I was like, "Is his uncle Pete Holmes?" Like I was so excited. And she's like, "No, his name is Dave Holmes," and she like pulled it up, and he's done like some stuff, but he, you know, it's not like a recognizable face, but he's done stuff, and he'll be a cool person to meet, I'm sure. But I was like, "Am I going to meet Pete Holmes at your wedding?"
That is
so
crazy. I was
so excited. It was a tease. But
Okay.
Anyway, all that to say, I'm binging Crashing. Also watching Seinfeld for the first time. I had never watched it.
So, really?
Yeah.
How are you loving it?
I do like it. I don't think I'm going to be like, this is the best show of all time, like a lot of people say. But, you know, I think like all things, you kind of have to watch them in their era.
You know, right? What's really cool for me with Seinfeld is like, I grew up watching Seinfeld, like Thursday night Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Like, so, but now rewatching the episodes, now that I'm doing stand up, it's like the whole part of his life that he's a stand up like that. That was always just like a part of his character, like growing up. But now, like, I want to see more of that, like where he's like, I gotta go, I gotta set later, and then and when he runs into comics he can't stand at the, like all of that stuff is so relatable to me now. I think it's so funny, and I'm enjoying rewatching Seinfeld.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun. Yeah. I'm a little bit jealous that you're experiencing Seinfeld for the first time. And you're already, and while you're doing stand-up, that's a cool perspective to have.
It's funny though, because you see him like something will happen in the episode, and then at the end of the episode he's like talking about it at a show, like as if he just wrote this like super tight several minutes. And you're like, probably not how that happened. But
hey, when you started going to open mics, because speaking of that, when you started going to open mics and you like, did you think that everyone had new material every week? How Seinfeld would just write a bit?
Like, yeah, I mean, I definitely like did my research and stuff, so I knew that it wasn't going to be like that. And then like taking the class with Drew, I definitely was like, so is it like weird like doing the same stuff every time? And he was like, you just get over it. Everyone's doing that, you know. It's like, it's not. No one's expecting you to come up with a different five. You're supposed to be crafting the same jokes over time.
Drew is a great one, because like some of his stuff that like I remember like just watching it like grow and evolve, and he's so great.
He's really good. He's young too, and he carries himself very mature, like just very, he's a very thoughtful person, you can tell.
It's the it's the trauma.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. He had a crazy childhood. Yeah. But it's funny. I feel like
at the callback show, the Johnny Taylor show, he was in the
He was hosting.
He was hosting next door. So he was watching a lot of the sets. He's great.
He's a cool guy. I think doing his class and then doing Johnny's class, I learned a lot from both of them. I feel like the thing I learned the most though was just like tact, like how many different ways you can be like, wow, you can definitely do that if you want to.
That joke, man. Oh man.
But there was like, I mean, it was even worse definitely in the class with Drew, where I was just like, oh my god, what is he gonna say? Because that was just wild. And all just right. like that's not typical stand-up, but that, I mean, it definitely seemed like it worked for you.
right on. Question number three, Holly, what are you afraid of?
I'm afraid of like two conflicting things. I'm afraid of not reaching my own potential, and then I'm also afraid of sacrificing my family to reach my potential.
Have you had instances where you had some guilt about the time you're spending with comedy already? Like, is that already happening? Are you dealing with that?
Yeah, it's definitely just constant. I feel like my husband and I have had more conversations in the last few months than we ever have our whole marriage, of just like, okay, how's this working for you? It's not working for you. Okay. So I'm like trying to take it easy this month. I only have a couple things going on. Next month, I don't really have much going on. Yeah, it's hard because he's like, you're not home in the evenings. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm having fun. You know, like, yeah. This is great. And he's like, yeah, sitting at home sad. So just trying to figure out.
You'll find a balance, yeah, and you'll find the mics that work for you.
Yeah.
And for example, like, I think taking the storytelling class, like, I think like one night in the class is the equivalent to like five open mics.
Yeah, I could see that. Well, and then I think like in November and December, I had a lot of book stuff for the first time. You know, I started getting booked for things, and so I just said yes to everything because I was so excited.
Yeah.
And so then it became like 2-3 nights a week I had something booked, and he was like, oh, what? You know, so definitely going forward can kind of learn how to, what to say yes to.
Once you realize like what to say no to, mm-hmm, that you're gonna start finding a better balance,
mm-hmm,
and you're gonna start it'll be there, but it's hard, it's gonna take work, but you know that.
Yeah I don't want to, you know, miss out on my kids' childhood or anything. Thankfully most everything in comedy happens after they're in bed, so
right on. If you're on death row, what's your last meal?
Thai food. All the Thai food.
Is there a particular restaurant? Like, is there a restaurant in the Bay that you remember or here?
There's actually one in Montana that I love. Well,
I wasn't even
going to
say Montana. Like, I was like,
the only Thai people in town, and they make very good food. No, there's a couple places, but it's called Lemongrass, and it's so good. Shout out to them. But I actually haven't even had any here. My husband doesn't really like Thai food, so he doesn't take me.
I like
it's me throwing him under the bus.
I like Bangkok Garden in the Thomas,
okay,
off of Arena.
Okay,
that place is really great. But of course, there's all these places downtown, and I imagine Audacious would know the best Thai restaurant. Like,
oh yeah,
yeah,
for sure,
they're awesome. Mm-hmm. Okay, and Holly, what's next, man? What's next for you?
Got grad show tomorrow night. Tuesday night, not tomorrow night.
Made me panic.
I know. I saw the look on your face. I was like, that's not right. Tuesday night, our storytelling class. And then I have a roast battle at the end of the month on the main stage at Punchline. So, 28th.
Who are you battling?
I'm battling Josh Davis.
Never heard of him. No, what? I've heard the name. But
really?
Is that guy? No.
He runs the sesh.
Yeah. No, yeah. I know who Josh is.
He's very funny. He's new, but he's very funny.
So. Very creative. Dude, what's going on at the sesh is freaking amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun. It's a fun time there. Have you been out there at all?
No.
Yeah. It's fun.
No, but I see the clips. And I've spoken with Lexi
at
length. And then the stuff that I see that they're doing out there, I think is great.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Yep. Kudos to them.
Yeah. No, Josh will definitely give me a run for my money. He's a good roaster.
Do you know who else is battling that night?
Yeah. Lexi and David Rodriguez are battling.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's going to be a really good one.
That's a good one. That's Friday night. When is that?
No, it's a Thursday. I think it's the 28th.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
Gosh, that's going to be
a good Dakota one. And Shining. I don't know her, but I think she's a good comic. Who's the other one? Daniel Madrid and Giovanni.
Okay. What's Giovanni, like 0-5?
Yeah. And I'm one of those five. No.
Oh, I remember. I saw him the night that you destroyed him. Yeah, I remember that.
There's a couple more good ones, but I can't think of them off the top. Alvin Duke and Subas.
Oh no! Why?
I don't know. But it will be interesting.
They're gonna carry Subas off in a stretcher, I think.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. All right, Holly, did we talk about everything you wanted to talk about?
I think so.
You did?
Yeah.
We did? All right. Well, thanks for coming over and having coffee with me.
Thanks for having me.
How was the coffee?
It was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. All fantastic.
Right. All right. Well, thanks for coming by, Holly. I really appreciate you.
Thanks for having me. Right. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye.